This is episode number 763 of the Secret Identity Podcast, and today in What's New, we're going to talk about Spectacular Spider-Man, Secret Empire, comics news sites, and Comixology. Our comics this week will be Kiss the Demon, number 1, Unstoppable Wasp, number 1, and Justice League, number 14. And this week's Out of the Long Box will be Spread, number 1.
Before we get started, does anyone want to get out?
The Human Torch was denied a bank loan.
This is all your fault, you.
Get that finger out of your ear. You don't know where that finger's been.
Why do you keep staring at me?
You have 20 seconds to comply.
And welcome everybody to Secret Identity. This is Brian Letenry here with Matthew A. Herring, the beautiful, the wonderful, the most talented guy in the universe. How are you doing today, sir?
I could just sit here all day and hear that.
I actually say that stuff when we're on the phone together, when I come over to your house.
It's usually how you start the I always know it's you.
I like to promote positivity.
Yep.
You know what I mean? I like to make people feel good.
Yep, and you know that I could be diva-ish, so to keep pumping me up.
Oh, my goodness. Holy lead singer syndrome.
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, that's been well documented to this point. So if I don't do that, then it's like, whoa, what, I don't look good today?
Yeah,
like,
what's
if I had just left that out.
Yeah, what's the matter? You don't like me today?
I'm here with Matt Herring today.
Yeah.
After the show, you would have been like, you didn't say that I looked good.
There was not one adjective used.
You didn't say that I was talented. So you were all of those things.
Thank you.
Let's jump right into our news, Matthew, this week. There's a big article that I want to talk about, so I'm going to get the small stuff out of the way first. Captain America.
Mm-hmm.
You read that book.
I know Captain America.
You've been following Nick Spencer's Captain America run. Marvel is set to reveal Captain America's allegiance to Hydra in an all-new 9-issue series kicking off in April. Marvel sister company ABC News reports. This is from ICV2. Secret Empire will be written by Nick Spencer with interior art by Steve McNiven, Andrea Sorrentina, Daniel Acuna, and Lionel Francis Yu. Issue number 0 hits shelves in April, with issue number 1 following in May. Spencer revealed Cap's ties to Hydra and Captain America Steve Rogers number 1, but those ties have been largely hidden from the wider Marvel universe as it rides out Civil War II and the Inhumans versus X-Men event. Secret Empire will reveal Captain America's loyalty to Hydra early on, as issue 0 has Cap leading S.H.I.E.L.D.'s response to 3 separate attacks, but by the end of issue 1, Cap's secret is out, and the once fractured Marvel universe will come together to take on Steve Rogers.
Huh, interesting.
What do you think about that as someone who's been following the Hydra Cap Chronicles?
I think that it is a weak premise, only in the fact that you're going to have the entire DC or the entire Marvel universe going after a Captain America, who is a bad guy now. You know it's going to flip over eventually. I have enjoyed what we've gotten so far from Nick Spencer because it is part of the regular series. It's the ongoing story that's being told. Now we're having an entire miniseries or entire series based on he's bad. The entire universe is going to go – the Marvel universe is going to go get him and go against him. Now it doesn't seem as organic. Now it seems forced.
Let me ask you this, Matthew. As a hardcore Captain America fan – which you are.
Since
arguably your favorite Marvel hero, right?
What, he's my favorite superhero.
Favorite superhero. Not even just Marvel hero. Favorite superhero. If you're not sold on this event, what does that say for the rest of us? Because I agree with you 100%. My question to you was going to be, have they revealed that the Red Skull is behind the Hydra origin of Cap?
To an extent they have.
Okay, but they haven't definitively said, like, this is all a lie or these memories are false or anything like that. Okay, so we can assume that that's coming during this secret Captain America, whatever they just call it, what it was, Secret Empire event. So, yeah. Is there anyone in the universe that believes that Captain America is not going to be reset to good guy by either the end of this series or the fallout of this series or whatever the case may be? We just had Civil War II, which... again, not knowing the sales numbers, certainly critically bombed in terms of what fans thought of it and what retailers thought of it and what critics thought of it. So now we're getting ready to do Secret Empire, which is hot on the heels of that. I like how they say the once fractured Marvel Universe.
Oh, it's pretty fractured.
You literally just fractured it like a week ago.
Yeah.
You just wrapped up, you know, Civil War II.
Yeah.
So you haven't even let it be fractured for that long, and now you're reuniting it immediately. Like, it's like these – to me, that's like the microcosm of the fact that these events are coming so fast and furious now that who gives a crap? At the end of this, you know that Cap will be a good guy again. Everybody's going to be friends again, I guess, until the next big thing that comes along. It's like Inhumans versus X-Men. It's like good guys versus good guys. Stop doing good guys versus good guys.
It's the old team-up issue. It's the Marvel team-up, Marvel 2-in-1, where for the first five pages, they fight. The heroes will fight until they go, whoa, wait a minute. No, we're on the same page. And then it all...
Yeah, issues 1 through 4, we find Cap fighting the Marvel Universe. And then by issue 5, we find out it was the Red Skull that was behind it all the time. And the Red Skull has all these sleeper agents and this big thing's going to happen. And then now Cap fights with them to defeat the Red Skull at the end of it and reclaim his legacy and all blah, 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 blah.
Or Steve Rogers never woke up from rebirth and... This is somebody else who's had the
also
memories.
Just as plausible.
Yeah.
Steve Rogers, when Captain America was shot at the end of the first Civil War, whatever, he never came back.
Yeah, and these are the memories they're trying to implant into this life model decoy.
See, life, but whatever, life model decoy. We just wrote it. We just wrote two different versions of it. Use whatever one you want. But that's the problem is there's no it's hard to have stakes in any of these events because there's no long-term vision.
Yeah.
We can see beyond the end of this. So this is a 9-issue series. We can already see to the end and know that Captain America is going to be reestablished in his rightful place in the Marvel Universe. So at this point, you almost want to say, like, don't bother.
Yeah.
Don't bother having this event because there's no way that you can provide – you can't surprise us when we know what the end is going to be.
Yep.
You can move the pieces around in a really exciting way, and you could throw a couple more pieces in, and you can break some smaller pieces. We'll kill off some other heroes in this event that we don't care about as much as Captain America, or they don't care about as much as Captain America. But at the end, we know what the pieces are going to be. And you know, my thought about that is prove us wrong.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to buy it for you to prove me wrong. I'll find out. If you prove me wrong, maybe I'll go back and read the trade.
Yep.
But that's the problem now, is that it's just one after another, after another, after another. And who gives a crap? Because what are the long-term consequences of this storyline? You don't have any. Nothing builds to anything. It just builds to a reset. It's like, I was talking to Daryl about this the other day. We were talking on Facebook back and forth. I'm really at a place of a crossroads with Marvel.
Yeah.
Of really feeling like the wheels just keep going round and round and round, and we're not getting anywhere.
No. One of the things that I think hurt Marvel the most is the fact that when DC did the new 52, we are rebooting everything. We are hitting the reset button. We are starting all over. People freaked out about that. And then Marvel said, well, you know what? We're going to do a reboot, but it's going to be a soft reboot. Some of the characters will be same. Some will be different. And then when DC went back to do the DC rebirth and rebooted everything, retcon started all over. Now Marvel's kind of looking at it going, okay, maybe reboot isn't a bad word anymore. Because that's honestly, they need to just press the button, start over again, and leave it alone and just tell stories.
I think there's political reasons behind where Marvel's headed in their recent direction as well. I think that whether it's accurate or not, I think the perception of where Marvel has gone in the past few years is in a very progressive direction. And I think given the results of the election, they are perceiving that there was a backlash against some of the stuff that they have done in their comic books, and they're going to rein some of that in. Mm. I hope that what we don't get at the end of that process is a less diverse and less sort of bold line of comics for Marvel, because I don't think that that's Marvel's problem. I think Marvel's problem is that they're not telling good stories right now.
Yeah.
Not that they don't have good characters, not that they don't have good premises, but that they're not telling good stories. That's the piece that they need to figure out, not to rein everything back in and hit the reset button. I'm not looking for that from Marvel. But like I said, I haven't really been happy with a lot of the stories that are coming out of there for a while. And so I have been living with the Spider family of books, from Spider-Woman through all the Spidey stuff, Ms. Marvel, and then the occasional pickup of other books that interest me, but whether or not I stay on them, it depends on, you know, where we go from there. I picked up the first couple of issues of the new She-Hulk series. Don't like it. Mm. Not where I was that character was fantastic before. Yep. Why are you changing her? We'll talk about Unstoppable Wasp in a minute because I did like the first issue of that. But yeah, so speaking of Spidey family, apparently Marvel is content to just give me as many Spider books as I can possibly handle. And then I just don't have to worry about the rest of the Marvel universe because Peter Parker is getting yet another series debuting on Free Comic Book Day and then kicking off in June. Peter Parker, the Spectacular Spider-Man, will be written by Chip Zdarsky with art by Adam Kubert and will take Peter Parker back to basics. Back to Basics,
you gave
Matthew.
Me two names that I'm interested in.
According to the announcement by Entertainment Weekly, if Back to Basics sounds a bit like meat and potatoes, this is from Bleeding Cool, which is why the snark is in there, then you're a very keen observer. Bleeding Cool has been reporting on Marvel's plans to copy DC's Rebirth with a meat and potatoes focus of their own later this year, eschewing a focus on politics, bringing back the iconic heroes, and even bringing back some big-name creators. On Entertainment Weekly, Zdarsky shared some info about the series. The main book, Amazing Spider-Man, has kept things fresh by stretching the character and his situation. This will still be classic Spider-Man as its core, but transported into new settings. That's what that one was. With this book, we're using the same Spider-Man in continuity, but shifting the spotlight back to New York City and his supporting cast. That on its face, I'm excited about.
I am excited about
it. I think that there is a great supporting cast in New York for a Spidey book to focus on. So that could be great. And until you do too many Spider books that I can't handle them or I feel like it's getting watered down, then I say the more the merrier. So I will be looking forward to that. But increasingly, what Spider-Man has become at Marvel is what Batman has had become for many years at DC, which is his own little universe. Mm-hmm. You can be a Spider-Man reader and not give a crap about the rest of the Marvel universe.
Because there's enough for you.
And you could be a Batman reader and not give a crap about the rest of Gotham is its own comic book universe. And Spider-Man's New York is its own comic book universe. And so to me, that's a positive for fans of those characters, but it's a negative for the company as a whole. Because you are allowing fans of those characters to really just isolate themselves in that family and not have to worry about anything else you do. Mm. So for me, that's what it's increasingly become. And Marvel will have to pull me out of that to get me to explore those Avengers books and all that stuff, you know, on down the road. So that was that. What else? We talked in the last episode about that Marvel Rebirth, and I had more on that. But basically, it's exactly what we just talked about. It's the sort of meat and potatoes reset of the Marvel Universe, featuring some very big name creators, and that seems to be in the works right now. So we'll see what happens with that. You wanted to mention Comixology, Matthew.
Yeah. Now, Comixology is, if you didn't already know, we talked about this maybe 3 years ago, 4 years ago, when that happened. But Comixology is an Amazon company. And I recently put in for a job there, and did not get it. I didn't even interview, but the point about that was it really got me looking at the Comixology website all the time and looking at some of the amazing things that are going on over there. You're part of the Comixology Unlimited.
Well, it's interesting, Matthew, first of all, that I missed the boat all along. I have been championing.
Yes.
Digital comics on this show. I mean, we've had a relationship with Drive-Thru Comics for
ever.
Pretty much the entire run of this show. So championing the digital revolution. If I would have known that all we had to do was get you a job at Amazon at some point along the way to get you on the digital comic train, I would have pushed you to apply to a job at Amazon years ago.
Yeah.
Yes, I am a big fan of Comixology. I was a fan of them before they became part of Amazon, and I continue to be a fan of them as someone who already had Amazon Prime. Having Comixology come under their umbrella, to me, makes life even easier than it was before because now you can buy things on Amazon that you will be able to read in your Comixology collection. You can use your Amazon account to sign into your Comixology account. You can merge them, which is what I've done. And for, I think, $6 a month, you can get into Comixology Unlimited, which is basically an ongoing lending library of titles that all of the publishers that are affiliated with Comixology will put parts of their collection in. And often it's the first volume or the first two volumes of a collection. So you can really start reading. I'm trying to think of one I'm reading out. Faith from Valiant. I missed the boat when Faith first came out. You can read the first volume of Faith on Kindle Unlimited right now. And every month they're adding more titles. Some kind of go by the wayside, kind of like Netflix mm-hmm. after a while, but most of them have kind of stuck around and they're adding more all the time. So if there are series that you wanted to check out and haven't got a chance to, or you missed an issue of and you dropped off or something like that, the early volumes of a ton of different series from all different publishers,
yep.
all different genres are available for $6 a month. So if you're trying to make that digital transition, or even if you just want to augment what you're spending in print comics without breaking the bank, to pay $6 a month for you know, Comixology Unlimited, to me, is a no-brainer. It's I don't even think about it. And yeah. I get at least $6 worth and then some every month from that. Not to mention, it's a full-fledged storefront. So you can buy comics from a lot of indie publishers as well,
yep.
have their stuff up on Comixology now. And so you can buy comics just straight up
yep.
through there. But then obviously you can do the Unlimited thing.
Easy to navigate too when you go in there and all the brand new titles. So I was doing a lot of looking to get more familiar. And you see too that they do these, you know, daily specials where, hey, everything that Cullen Bunn has written is 50% off.
As we record this right now, which is a couple days after Valentine's Day, I want to say that there is currently a sale on Comixology about the X-23 character.
Okay.
So because clearly she's
and
part of the new Logan movie that's coming
too.
Out.
Yep.
So they do a lot of stuff that's responsive to what's happening with other events or what's happening with characters who might be crossing over into other media or whatever the case may be. So yeah, they do a nice job of spotlighting collections so that you can go in and really stock up if you haven't checked this out or you want to catch up or whatever the case may be. So yeah, Comixology is great. I've been a Comixology customer since well before they became part of Amazon,
yeah.
and now it's even easier for me. So
and one of the things that I'm going to be doing as prices are starting to go up is obviously I'm a collector, so I need to still collect. So I am going to be collecting the books that I need to get, have to get. And then some of the fringe stuff that I can't afford, I'm going to read it through that.
It's a good, I think, option
yep.
for those who either A, want to dip their toe into digital, or B, want to do what you're doing, which is augment the stuff that they're purchasing in print.
Yep.
I am taking it a step further and going in the other direction. And I buy a ton of stuff through drive-thru, and I also get a ton of stuff through Comixology. I am slowing down my print buying
mm-hmm.
and trying to make that transition. And I tried to do it a few years ago and it didn't take.
Yep.
And now I'm moving even more in that direction because I simply do not have the space. And my own kids are not as into comic books as I am. My son likes certain characters and he likes certain books, and I will always keep all my Spidey books and all my 2099 books. But outside of that, I actually have to have you come over because I have boxes and boxes of comics that I'm going to get rid of.
Yeah.
I'm either going to bring them to our local comic shop or I'll sell them on eBay or whatever the case may be. And I'm trying to go more digital. So it's a good place to start thinking about that too.
Yeah. And it's also too, I will say, for somebody like me who does not like to use his glasses while reading, that's also a big advantage too, because I can make it bigger.
Right.
And I can blow up panels and things like that.
Yes.
Great stuff.
So the last thing I want to talk about in the news today, and this is a bit long, but I'm going to encourage you to go to comicsbeat.com, which is known as The Beat, and read the article that Heidi McDonald wrote this week. And she is one of the best voices in comics news because she still does, and she's been doing this for many, many years, but what she still does that a lot of sites are not doing anymore is long form features and in-depth articles. What she put together this week, and I thought it was a fascinating read because there's a lot of parallels to what's happening in the video game world and just online journalism in general. I'm not going to read all of it, but I'm going to read you bits and pieces of an article where she basically was saying that 30% of the news that you see on comic book news sites is actually about comics.
How much?
30% out of 100%. 30% of the stories that you see on your average comic book
yeah.
news site are actually about comics. And 70%, by contrast, are not about comics. Okay? So I'm just going to read you a bit of this. She said, Months ago, a comic book publicist and I were chatting about this, and he suggested rather ominously, have you ever tried counting how many stories on comics news sites are actually about comics? You'd be surprised. And she said, the idea percolated in my head for a while, and it took a while to do it, but I did. And the answer probably won't surprise you a bit. Only about 30% of the stories on the top six comic sites, Comic Book Resources, ComicBook.com, Bleeding Cool, Newsarama, Comics Alliance, and The Beat, the very site that she is writing for, are about comic book news. More than half, 54%, are movie, TV, or nerd-lebrity.
Nerd-lebrity.
I like that.
I like
news.
That.
The rest is a melange of toys, wrestling, video games, and what I'd call related business news, like conventions, collectibles, and human interest. She said, before I dig into all the groovy charts I made using Excel's oh-so-easy automated pie chart button, let me explain how I did this. And she goes into her methodology for how she looked at these stories, how she categorized things. You know, she says, so I'll just give you the part she says about comics. For a comic news story, this is what she defined as that. A story about comic book or graphic novel publishing news, including cartoonist interviews, reviews, previews, personnel changes, and so on. That was what she defined as actual comic book news. But she talked about media, video, toys, wrestling, all these other categories. And she looked at a particular week of time at the stories, and you can download a list of all the stories that she used for this project, and it's a 75-page PDF. So she did a ton of research into this, and so she said, let's look at the overall picture. As you can see, comicbook.com won the race for most stories overall. They had nearly 600 stories over this period of time that she looked at, nearly twice as many as Bleeding Cool and CBR. However, they ran only three more comic stories than the smallest site, The Beat. Here's the overall breakdown of all the stories, where things, and she has a big pie chart, where things get really gnarly is in this chart, which shows the percentage of comic stories on each site. Newsarama was the surprise winner here, with The Beat a couple of points behind. CBR, Bleeding Cool, and Comics Alliance all fell in the golden ratio of about 40% comics-based story. Comicbook.com ran only 7% actual stories about comics. She then goes on to break down each individual website and what they did. And she comes to she has her conclusions part, which I'll just read real quick. I didn't learn anything too startling from this exercise. Although Newsarama and comicbook.com's evolved content mix was a bit of a surprise, I knew full well that it's hard to make a living running a news site that's just about comics. And the fact that most comics news sites now run more stories about what's on the Doctor Strange DVD than about what's inside the covers of a Doctor Strange comic is a little sad, but not unexpected. What did jump out at me is how little news about anything other than Marvel or DC gets out there. Since CBR went corporate, The Beat has more opportunities than ever to work directly with publishers, and it's obvious to me why. Very few sites with any reach are publishing news about indies or even Image, Dark Horse, and IDW. On a personal level, this kind of gave me a little boost. After 15 years of doing this, it's hard to get too inspired about anything, but to know that you're filling a niche is very satisfying. Given how the internet works these days, it would be hard for a new site to even get the traffic level of The Beat without a serious investment in marketing. It's niche and there is too much competition, yet there is a lot of territory that is not being covered, and there is a lot of room to make comics coverage better. She said, just to give one example, yesterday Top Shelf sent out a press release about the Home Time Under the River. About Home Time Under the River. Although the creator is unknown and the book is coming from a major publisher, IDW, the number four publisher of the year, and the art is as good as anything out there. While running news from a press release is utterly basic, as shown above, comics news sites have a pretty low bar to clear on that. However, The Beat was the only major site to cover the news, along with a resurgent but bylineless Comic-Con.com that was hired by Hanameen Shannon as executive editor. Another thing is that increasingly missing from comics news is anything more than puff pieces. We don't even have the Cup of Axel or Didio in charge anymore. Of course, investigative journalism takes time, as this very piece shows, and without a good reason to mess up your exclusive relationship with a publisher, what's the point? So one of the takeaways from this, and I would encourage you, I've just scratched the surface of what Heidi has done here. If you're not reading The Beat already, comicsbeat.com, you should absolutely put that in your bookmarks bar. You should be reading it because there is good comics journalism happening over there. And Heidi has been a staple of the industry for many, many years at this point. And I believe they also have a Patreon, so you can go support them if you want to continue to see that kind of writing. This struck a real chord with me for a couple of reasons. Number one, because as someone who, along with yourself, Matthew, has podcasted for 11 years now, who has been talking to creators for 11 years now, we know all too well that it is almost impossible for indie creators to get any attention on anything that they're doing from a site that has any sort of traffic. And so this is not surprising to us when we hear these results. So what you're seeing on these sites is a combination of a very low percentage of comic news, and that comic news is about two companies.
Yeah.
So even the 30% that we're talking about is about two companies. So when you dial into of 100% of a site's coverage, now you're probably into the very low single digits when you talk about the percentage of news on comic book news sites that covers anything other than Marvel and DC. Now, that's very depressing. Mm-hmm. If you are a creator who is trying to get your work noticed, that's very depressing. If you are someone who is trying to get the word out about the great things that your indie publisher is doing. And it's also a little bit unfortunate for the larger reading populace, because when you're trying to bring new readers into comics and you're trying to show people that there are comics out there that are not just spandex and superheroes, it's difficult to do that when all of the news sites are only talking about stories from the big two. So all of that makes it very difficult as a creator to get your word out there. However, one of the wonderful things about the comic creator community is that when podcasting first kind of really came on the scene, and we were not there at the very beginning of it, but we were pretty early days, you know, in terms of getting out there, comic creators were some of the first people out there to realize that there was a real opportunity in reaching out to podcasters to get their message out about their books, to get interviews done, to spread the word about what they were doing in a way that the news sites weren't going to cover. And so that is kind of awesome. It's awesome on the part of the creators. And Anthony Johnson is one that always pops into my mind as somebody who was on that from the get-go. But it was cool to be a part of that. But it's also very encouraging to people out there who are thinking about starting a podcast or thinking about starting a website. Now, as Heidi mentioned here, you know, it's impossible nowadays, or near impossible, to generate the kind of numbers that you're seeing from some of these large established sites. You're not going to break in and suddenly become that tomorrow. But where your angle is that, as Heidi clearly underlined in this article, there is so much happening in the comic world that is not being talked about on major news sites, that you could become one of the voices that talks about the myriad of things that's not – you don't even have to cover all of it.
Yeah.
Cover a piece of it. Find your angle. Do a show about this particular thing. Do a show about these particular things. Like, there is so much room for people to help spread the word about what's happening in comics, because there's so much that's not being talked about. So from a standpoint of someone who likes to create content and a standpoint of someone who likes to talk to people about the cool stuff that they make, boy, is there an opportunity here for bloggers and YouTube creators and podcasters to really start to fill that void that I can tell you right now is only going to get worse from these major sites. You're going to see less in-depth reporting. You're going to see less analysis. You're going to see more news bites. You're going to see more stories built around a tweet. You're going to see more stuff that has nothing to do with comics, because that fits the attention span of the BuzzFeed mentality that people have when they go to websites now. Here are the top 15 things that you missed from Doctor Strange. Yeah. Click each single one, because every time you click on it, we get more ad revenue.
Yes.
And in order to keep our ad revenue up, we have to cut every story into 15 slides. As opposed to just letting you read it long form. Like, if that annoys you, then don't feed into it.
Yep.
Okay, because the more you feed into it and the more that you show these sites that that is what you want to consume, the more that that is what they're going to create. If you want longer form journalism, if you want more in-depth coverage of certain things, if you want certain aspects of the industry to be covered that are not covering them right now, then every time somebody comes along that does that, support them.
Yep.
And I mentioned The Beat, and you can go and support The Beat, and you can go and read The Beat and give them your clicks, because they're – or any of these – and they're not the only one. I'm singling them out because Heidi has done this for a long time, and this is yet another example of that kind of reporting. One other reason this struck a chord with me is because I've been having this discussion about the video games industry for a very long time. As someone who used to cover video games for comic book resources, and when I did that, when I came there, my pitch to them was, we're not going to cover video games like everybody else is covering video games. We're not going to do reviews like everybody's doing reviews. We're going to interview creators and we're going to talk to them about the things that they're making. And Jonah, who no longer owns CBR,
yep.
when Heidi said they went corporate, it's when Jonah sold the company.
Yeah.
Jonah ran that site wonderfully for many, many, many years. And he gave me the freedom when I covered games for them to do whatever I yep. wanted to do and to really shape that coverage into the way that I wanted to shape it. And there was a lot of long form stuff that was going on over there in comics at the time. That's when some of the columns that Heidi mentioned were happening over there and stuff like that. So it's not that it can't happen. It's that right now the drive is away from that type of content. And so if you want that type of content, you have to support it and you have to demand it. But if you're somebody out there who wants to be part of the voices that spread the word about it, there's so much opportunity.
Yep.
So when people say, well, another comic book podcast, why would I start a comic book podcast? Why would I start a website about comic books? Why would I, you know, try to interview people? Why would I get into that now? There's so many of them out there. Because there's still so much that's not being talked about.
There's so much out there that nobody talks to and nobody talks
about. We still talk about the big two all the time.
Yep.
You know, And we interview tons of creators and we've interviewed hundreds of creators for this show, but there's thousands more out there
yep.
that are doing that. So, you know, there's plenty of room for you and there's plenty of room for your voice, and the creators need more people to help spread the word yep. about what they're doing if we're going to grow the comics reading community. And so by all means, you know, jump in. And make a content and support the people out there that are doing that, like Heidi. That's a great article. You should absolutely go and read that. Very, very eye-opening stuff. If you haven't been keeping your finger on the pulse of the industry for a long time, but if you have watched how journalism has evolved, then it won't be too shocking to you.
And I love hearing IDW is the fourth biggest. I love that.
Yeah, well, go check this out. She did a really great job with yep. that particular article. So let's take a deep breath, Matt.
Yes.
That was a lot. That was some heavy stuff right there, okay? And let's talk about comics, because you are going to start off with a comic about one of your favorite bands of all time.
One of my favorite bands of all time. Dynamite recently, I'd say about 7 or 8 months, has had the KISS comic book license. Now, KISS is celebrating 40 years in comic books, and it's interesting.
Which is mind-boggling to me.
Yeah. I was reading a book yesterday from 1982. And it was talking about how KISS is going to release the album Animalize, which is KISS's celebration of 10 years in the comic industry or in the music industry.
Uh-huh.
And I remember as a kid, I read that going, by the time that album came out, I thought KISS was around for like 50 years. You know, you just
sure.
you start losing track of time and things like that. But KISS has had a 40-year comic book history. And I'm really enjoying the current series that's going on. It's about this dystopian society in the future. By this guy, Blackwell, who's created this whole thing.
You know what I love about KISS comics? And admittedly, I don't buy a ton of KISS comics. Yep. I've read some of yours, and I love hearing you talk about them. I love that the KISS comics are just completely off the wall.
Yeah.
Where are we going to put these four characters this time?
Yeah.
What ridiculous. Oh, well, let's do a mafia story from
yeah.
back in time. Oh, let's throw them in the middle of a dystopian universe. Like, I yeah. just love that. It's just... It's KISS. You can put them anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it's basically it's the image and it's the visuals. It's not.
Right.
You're not getting a comic book to hear Christine 16. This is what you're getting.
No, I'm buying a comic to hear Tears Have Fallen.
Oh, yeah. And the only thing that I've ever asked of a KISS comic is please have characters that are named after comics and have references in there. And since I'm a deep, deep, deep KISS fan, make them obscure. So this thing about Blackwell being this company that runs the future, and this story starts in Blackwell, Iowa. Mr. Blackwell was the main character in KISS's Music from the Elder album, which is the yep. one that most KISS fans will go, I don't even count that one. That does not even exist. And it's a great, great album. This one is written by Amy Chu and Eric Burnham. Now, Eric is the writer of Ghostbusters. And for people that know me and know my Doctor Who book, he did the Matt Smith picture in the Doctor Who book for me. And even Casellos is the artist on this one. Troy Petteri is the letterer. So I'll stay right now. This book visually is amazing. Iman does a great job with it. And I got the – Is it a 16-bit cover, Brian? Because what is the digital? Is that 16-bit?
I can't see. If it's pixelated, it's either 8 or 16-bit.
Okay, yeah, so it's a 16-bit cover of Gene Simmons. Looks like it's out of a video game. And you start this one off with this guy saying, hey, you know what, Mr. Blackwell, we need to talk to you right now. And they're saying, you know, you need to be informed of this particular thing. And then all of a sudden, he's an older man, turns around, screams, I said, get out. And you see in his office, he's older and he's looking at a magazine talking about a KISS concert that's coming to Blackwell City. And now you go back to then and you have these two kids that are breaking into a building, or now that they're trying to break into backstage. Now, it's very interesting because in the KISS comic right now, you have four kids that have broken into a part of the society that nobody knows about.
Kids, man.
Yep.
That's what they do.
Yep. So they break in and they go backstage. They're being chased by a security guard. And as they turn a corner, they are face to face with KISS. Now, it's hysterical because Gene Simmons is like this muscular, massive.
Of course he is.
Monster.
Why wouldn't
guy.
He be? He's the demon.
Yes. And they come around the corner and the security guard's like, oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Simmons. And then there's a kid there going, hey, you know what? Let those kids go there with me. I go to school with them. So the two kids, they're like, oh my gosh, hey, thank you so much about that. You know, and then they see KISS and they're like, we're such big fans. And then you find out that after KISS plays this concert, the kid is a Blackwell and his father owns the company that pretty much owns the entire time. And then they're out to eat and, as they are eating, and I'll show you, Brian, I'll show you the diner that they're eating in. Black and white floors, red booth. Looks like my dining room a little bit.
A little
right
bit.
Over here.
Inspired by the Herring residence.
Yes. So thank you, Eric Burnham, because I know that you did that. I know that that was because of that. So the three of them are talking, and they've never even really spoken to this kid before. They're talking about how much they love KISS, how great it was. And they all of a sudden realize that they want to start a band. So then you see in the next few pages, they're starting a band. They're playing in a band. They've got the KISS makeup on, and they're doing they're talking about trying to do their own originals. And then all of a sudden, a door opens up. And what happens here is because this Blackwell kid is rich and loaded because his dad is. He's gotten him a place to practice in the factory. Father unfortunately comes in, grabs the bass guitar out of the kid's hand, slams it into the drum set, starts screaming, saying, "You're done with this kind of music. You're done with anything. You need to get your head out of your butt and you need to focus on what's going on." And that is taking over the company. And so he chases the kids out of there, starts screaming at his dad, at the kid. And then the kid is like, look, you need to let me explain. And the father, and of course you're looking at this as you would as this was like every KISS song. This was us when we were in the growing up in the 70s and 80s, your parents telling you not to listen to rock music. And the father, who's not a bad guy, is saying, look, my father started this company. We employ 90% of this town. Our responsibility is to make money for this town, make money for this company, and for us to have a beautiful life. I've given you a great life. And he goes, I want you to do this. And the kid's like, you don't understand, Dad. You don't know what's going on.
You don't know me.
You don't know me. You don't know what's best for this company or the world. And then he walks out of here. He storms out and he tells his father, as far as you are concerned, your son is dead. Storms off, goes and finds the kids.
So a typical, you know, teenage rant against their parents.
This is the first 30 seconds of every heavy metal video. This is Twisted Sister.
Or at least one conversation that every kid has had during their high school years with
yes.
their parents.
Yes.
I'm never coming back.
Yep. So this Blackwell kid goes and finds the girl that he met, they were in the band and they're talking and, you know, she's like, oh, I'm sorry. I'm sure he didn't mean and you didn't mean what you said. And he leans in to kiss her and she goes, I don't know why you just went to do that. I thought we were just friends. And he's like, yep, add that one to the list. So then his father gets in the car and drives away. And as he's driving around a dangerous corner, he goes to tap the brakes. Car does not start. He goes off the cliff and dies. And now the kid is in charge of the company. So his two friends show up. And they're like, hey, Sam, we're so sorry about that. She gives him a hug and he looks at her and he's like, hello, Kim. And then walks away, gets in the car. And the two kids are like, I could I have said something else? And she goes, look, he's got a lot on his mind. You just got to kind of give him a break. And then she's looking at her friend and the boy goes, by the way, my father who works for Blackwell Industries just got transferred to California. So we're out of here. And then you see in Mr. Blackwell's office, the young kid, the secretary opens up the door and says, hey, the board is ready to meet with you. And she's like, oh, thank you very much. And then you turn the page and the picture of his grandfather has been replaced by a picture of the demon.
That's right.
And that is where this issue...
Because I'm the CEO of Metal now.
Yes. And that is where this issue ends.
I don't know what the future of this company holds, but I can tell you it's going to rock.
It's going to rock. And freaking loved it. I thought this was hysterical.
Awesome, dude. This is what KISS comics should be.
Yes. The angst of being... Because when you were a KISS fan growing up, much like when metal first kind of got big in the 80s, aligned yourself to it and... Right. You felt alienated, and you felt like when you found people that liked what you liked, you had a community.
Being a metal fan is a club that you join for life,
yes.
Right? So there's that angle of it.
Yep.
But also, like, if you are going to tell me that someone is making a KISS comic,
yep.
And then you start telling me any story that I've heard before from anyone, I don't want to get
yep.
out of here with
yep.
that. Make it ridiculous. Take it in a direction that I'm not going to read in some other book.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah. So it's interesting because this is like the beginning of this society that he has been created in the KISS comic. And now you're seeing why the Sentinels and all the main imagery in this city is KISS related.
There you go.
Because he was a KISS fan.
Right. I'm going to remake the world like an album cover.
Yes.
Imagine that. That's a good discussion question. Yes. If you could remake the world into one that reflects a particular heavy metal album cover.
Yeah.
What would that cover be? You don't have to answer that question now. That's food to think on.
Food for thought,
Matthew. Something to think on. All right. We are going to jump over to Marvel now and talk about The Unstoppable Wasp, which I'm a little bit late on. I think it came out a few weeks ago. But it is written by Jeremy Whitley. It is art by Elsa Chartier. Colors by Megan Wilson, letters by Joe Caramagna, and the editor on this one, there are two, Alana Smith and Tom Brevoort. Now, the last I checked in to the larger events that were happening in the Marvel Universe, the Wasp had died during Secret Invasion.
Yes.
But recently came back?
I don't know, because I just knew she was dead.
This is a whole new Wasp. This Wasp is apparently the daughter of Hank Pym with his first wife before he met Janet. I think is how we're doing this. We start out in Manhattan, and you see that Miss Marvel is escorting the new Wasp around. And her name, I want to say, is Nadia. It is Nadia. So she's escorting Nadia around, and they're in a Pakistani bakery, and she's buying a bunch of donuts because she's never tasted these before. We come to find out pretty quickly that Nadia grew up in the Red Room, which, if I'm not mistaken, is where Black Widow became an assassin. Isn't that the Russian?
Yes.
The Ukrainian?
It was like the school of
right. It's like the school of villainy.
Yes.
So basically what happened was, it sounds like when Hank and her mother were together, her mother was kidnapped and Hank never saw her again. She was made to work as a scientist in the Red Room. And when Nadia was born, it was pretty clear early on that she was extremely intelligent mm-hmm. and very talented when it came to science. And so she is like a super scientist that has spent her entire life in the Red Room.
Yeah.
And when she discovered the secrets to Pym particles, she built herself a costume and escaped there. And now she's here with us. Now, apparently in whatever recent event that they happen, we have already met this character. So as you start off here, you're not really getting her true introduction. All you know is that she's new here. She's lived a very sheltered life. She's in Manhattan now. She's applying for citizenship, and she is really not familiar at all with what's going on in current time. And so as she's out here, she's walking across the street and not looking both ways, and Miss Marvel has to kind of protect her. She goes into the immigration office, and when she's there, she has to she's in the waiting room, and she's making friends with everybody in the waiting room, and everybody loves her. She's always positive. And as she's talking to the people that she's working with to get her citizenship, like, she's telling them her story, and she's telling them how what a lot of people don't know about my father is that before he became a superhero, he was married. His first wife, Maria Trovaya Pym, was the daughter of a Hungarian geneticist, It must have been love at first sight because they got married and Maria convinced him to take her back to Hungary for their honeymoon. And then one night, men appeared and pulled the love of his life away from him. Hank would never see her again. When she was kidnapped, she was pregnant. She gave birth to a young girl just before she died. Okay, so her mom died. And it was Nadia. I was raised in a secret facility called the Red Room in Russia where they train young girls to become weapons. So the Black Widow connection. So now she's here and she's telling this all to the woman that she's trying to get help her apply for citizenship. And so what the woman says is that that was an amazing story. I can't believe you're such a positive person and that you're not letting this completely destroy your life. In order for you to become a citizen, though, you're going to have to prove that Hank Pym was actually your father. And so as they're having that conversation, the building starts shaking because outside a giant robot is attacking the area. And as her and Miss Marvel run to the window, they see that Mockingbird is out there. Bobby Morse is out there battling this thing and going back and forth. And that's where you get the first Nadia's science fact. She does, like, throughout the book, you see these neat science facts where Nadia, who is a scientist, is pointing out scientific things that are happening around her. So here she's explaining how the different parts of this robot work together in order for it to be able to move around and pivot and do all this kind of stuff. And so that's interspersed with the dialogue that's happening. But as Mockingbird is fighting this giant robot, it starts to get the better of her. And so Nadia puts her wasp costume on, Miss Marvel goes out there, and Miss Marvel makes reference to The Empire Strikes Back in that she's going to wrap her arms around the legs, Wedge Antilles style,
yes,
and she's going to bring down this thing. And so Wasp goes inside the circuitry and starts connects to the sound system and starts making the robot dance and is blaring music throughout the whole thing. And they end up defeating the woman who is piloting this robot. And as Wasp gets in there, she realizes that the woman who is piloting this is a scientist. And she's talking to her and she's saying, oh, your name's Monica Rappacini. You know, I read your work and it was amazing. And how come you've become a villain? And she's basically saying, because it's too hard to get recognized in this field. I've done all this work, but you always hear about the same guys getting all the credit. And I never got any credit. And so it kind of frustrated me. And now I'm using my abilities for not so good. And so Nadia is trying to encourage her. And then we go after that, after they end up taking this robot down, they go for a smoothie with Mockingbird. And as they're talking to Mockingbird, you know, most people know Mockingbird because she's a SHIELD agent and because she can kick the crap out of people. Most people don't remember that she was a scientist and that she worked with Hank Pym at one point in time. And when Nadia reveals that she's Hank's daughter, Bobby is saying, oh, I worked with him. I did this work. And she's saying, I don't remember a Bobby in any of the paperwork that I read about my dad. And she says, no, it's short for Barbara Morse. And she's like, holy crap, you're this person who worked on this project and this project and this project, and you're my hero and you're the reason I wanted to become a hero. And basically brings Mockingbird to tears because she only knows her through her science and her scientific pursuits. She doesn't know her at all as Mockingbird, the superhero. She knows her as the scientist. And she said, I want to be just like you, a scientist who goes out and has all these adventures and everything. So she hits it off with Mockingbird right away. And we find out that apparently Hank Pym is gone and maybe presumed dead. I don't know what the deal with Hank is, but when Nadia came to the area and went to New Jersey and went looking for her father, he's not there. And I don't know if he's dead or if he's missing or whatever, but she's been hanging out at his house and she set up all her lab equipment there and she's talking to Mockingbird and they're talking about how there's this list of the smartest people in the world and Reed Richards is on it and all this kind of stuff and that it's all dudes.
Yeah.
Except for recently when Luna, Moon Girl, became the smartest person in the Marvel Universe, they had to change that list. And they're having this conversation about how Nadia is, with all the stuff that she's already working on, she should be on that list. And so she is going to start really working on inventions that are going to do good for people and getting her name out there and sort of proving to the world that that she should be on that list, but also recruiting other female scientists to kind of help her as well. And that's how the first issue ends. And what you get in the back of Agents, it's called the letters page in this one is called Agents of GIRL. And GIRL stands for Genius in Action Research Labs. And it says, hello, you magnificent people. Nadia here to welcome you to the letters page. Why do we call our letters page that, you ask? Well, that's a really good question. While we love getting letters about how much you love this book, we are also hard at work recruiting lady adventure scientists for Girl. And I may be able to fly, but I can't get to every lady genius in the world. So send us your suggestions for a comic reading, nerdy birdie, science adventure ladies, and we will use this space to profile our new members. Elsa even agreed to draw their pictures, and they start with two women, Rachel Silverstein and Marina Shanadu, who are actual scientists that they interviewed for the back of this issue. So in the back of every issue of The Unstoppable Wasp, they're going to have interviews with female scientists from the real world to encourage, like, you know, kids to get interested in STEM and stuff like that. Like that. What I like about this book is that there is very clearly a goal of getting acknowledgement for those scientists that are already out there and doing amazing work and shining a spotlight on it, but also in B, getting the reading audience interested in science and wanting them to sort of see that this is a career to pursue, that this is something to focus on at school, that this is something to get interested in. So I was really, I like the message of the book. I like the tone of the book. It fits very well with what we've seen from Ms. Marvel. If Mockingbird is going to be a major player in this book, I'm happy for that, because I think, didn't her series get canceled, Mockingbirds?
Yes.
I think it did. So we're going to see her in there. The artwork is great. Elsa Chartier, I'm not too familiar with her stuff, but she's fantastic. Megan Wilson's colors are great. And Jeremy Whitley does an awesome job with this book. So if you are looking for a fun and sort of empowering and educational read, then you should absolutely check this book out. I'm going to give you a code now, because the code in this one is actually for this
get
issue,
out.
Unlike some of what Marvel's doing right now.
That one slipped through the system.
It did. Yeah, it's probably one of the last ones. So if you go to marvel.com/redeem and you enter the following code, you can get yourself a copy of The Unstoppable Wasp number one. And that code is FZM5MEW88ZUS. Marvel.com/redeem. Get yourself a copy. Unstoppable Wasp. Very enjoyable read.
So on a smaller scale was what you just talked about, the Wasp. And on a large, epic stage is Justice League number 14. Now, Justice League, under the guys and the guidance of Brian Hitch, Brian creates these movies. It is a cinematography explosion of big pictures. Every panel is huge. And the stories are massive. It is, it definitely fits into the mold of what Batman is trying to create with the Justice League America, more down to earth, more street level, because these guys are taking on all comers, every threat.
And this is the cosmic level threats.
Yes. So Daniel Henriquez is the inker on this one, as well as with Brian. Alex Sinclair does the colors, and Richard Starking and Comicraft do the letters. So we start out with, you see Wonder Woman kind of in a cave holding herself, holding her side, going, is everybody okay? Who's not dead? And you have the girl Green Lantern, I forgot her name. She is alive, but holding up a bubble where all the other Justice League members are passed out, buried under rock. So you have Wonder Woman and her, the both of them are the ones holding everything together. Then you find out, you go back a little bit, where this huge ship entered the Earth's atmosphere, and you could see it like over the horizon. And I'll show you, Brian, the picture, but you've got the cityscape, and then you have this huge ship that just shows up.
Yep.
And without warning, without anything, it just started zapping the ground and stealing the elements. And what you find out later on is that the ship is sort of a mineral collector. It goes around and it goes to worlds, doesn't even register that there's life on this planet. It just goes and sucks it out, takes everything from the planet, leaves it a husk.
Well, that doesn't seem very nice.
Not very nice. So when the Justice League are dispatched to go take care of it, it is such a big threat that they can't even battle it. So what happens is that they get sucked into, like when this beam comes down and starts like drilling into the earth, they get caught in it and they get shoved into the depths of the earth. So these guys are buried deep, 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 deep. Jen is the Green Lantern. So all of a sudden, Cyborg is the first one to get up. And she's like, you okay? He goes, well, I'll let you know what's going on. Wonder Woman's going over and trying to get Superman up because she realizes that he's going to be their next biggest person to help them get out of this. he's weak and he's not, but he's not powerless. And the reason being is that he is now buried so far under the ground that the sun is not giving him the powers. And they've explained a lot lately that it isn't like a recharging of his cells. It is constant. Like, if he's in the sun, he's fine. If he's not in the sun, he gets a little depowered. And I kind of like that because it takes that threat away.
Is that something they're covering in Superman
a little
itself?
Bit. Yeah. Yep. Where he's not as powerful all the time. So he's down there and he's talking about how I'm weak because there isn't a lot of sunlight. And he's like, Vic, where are we? And Vic says, I figure right now we're 12 miles below Canada. So they are deep, deep, deep in the ground. Systems are pulling together. But right now, the only thing that is keeping the 12 miles of Earth from caving in on us and killing us is Jen. Jen's the only one doing this. And Jen, if you don't know Green Lantern, she's insecure. And
she's new, right?
She's new to this. She's insecure.
Was she a cop or something? Like what?
I don't know exactly. I didn't follow
who the new Green Lanterns are in the new rebirth, but she is one of two new Green Lanterns.
Yes, Simon
is
the other one. Okay. And what her issue too is that she was agoraphobic. Is that when you don't leave?
That's where you don't like crowds.
Yeah. So basically she doesn't even leave her apartment. She doesn't like anything. So like with me, I'm reading this being deathly claustrophobic. This is horrific.
I'm reading this one completely
uncomfortable going, just let it all cave in and kill us because I'd rather be dead than have to deal with this. So
that's why you're not on the team.
Yes.
You'd be the downer.
Yes. So while everybody's down there, the heroes are starting to wake up and you basically get what I really like about this because this series has been very action packed all the way through, but this is sort of that break in everything where you're starting to get how people are actually feeling. Like you have Flash, who's very worried about Jen because they started dating for a little bit, but then they kind of broke it off.
I think
a little
bit. I read the first couple issues of Justice League and that was when that was starting to happen.
Yep. And they, so they're talking and trying to, you know, it's like maybe, and you're seeing that things are bad. They're trying, well, maybe we ought to give this, if we get out of here, let's give it another try. We'll go out on a real date. We'll see what we can do and we'll see what's going on. And she's like, oh, you know what? I think that'd be a great idea. So then Aquaman is laying there and he's like, yeah, I'm way in out of my depth here. We are so far from water. I'm useless. And Batman is saying, you know what? I don't have any powers, but right now we got to do this. We got to get through this. So he's kind of trying to motivate Superman. And it's great because it's almost like just people sitting around a campfire. They're talking about their own personal things. They start talking about Aquaman saying, hey, you know what? This is really weird considering, you know, a month ago I was in trouble by the U.S. government. They thought I was a terrorist and wanted to arrest me. And they're kind of keeping you up to date on what's going on within their own books. This is where Batman says, you know, when we get out of here, we need to maybe think about you guys dealing with the big stuff. I can deal with the smaller stuff somewhere else at some other level. And they're kind of wondering and guessing what's going on in the real world out there because they're trapped. They can't get out. And right now, Simon, the other Green Lantern, is saying, all right, I'm starting to get weak in here. We need to figure something out. And he's talking about, yeah, this wouldn't have happened if Hal was here. And that's when Batman turns in and goes, what are you talking about? Hal picked you two. And he didn't pick you two because two equal one. He picked both of you. Because he thought that you guys were the best. He thought that you would represent very well. You would do this. You guys are in charge of the most powerful weapon in the universe. And obviously you were given that because you're smart and you know what to do. And he's really starting to pump them up. And as they start to sit around and realize, that it's, things are starting to cave in and they're like, hey, just not putting a lot of pressure on you, but you two are the only thing keeping us alive here. One of you is keeping enough oxygen in here, and the other one is keeping the rock from falling in. So this is amazing that you guys are doing this. There's a bunch of Star Wars references in there about, you know, they're like, hey, think about this big ship that's out there. And Batman goes, it's like the Death Star, that the Death Star had that trench, and that was where the weakness was. So we can take that big ship out, and then Flash is going, all right, something's really wrong because you got Batman giving us Star Wars references. They start talking about what they're going to do once they get out, how they're going to deal with the ship. And then all of a sudden, that is what happens. You see, like, they're saying, all right, you know what? Let's go. I think we can get out of this. You turn the page and you see the ship that they were going to take care of is now crashing and destroyed. and they are being praised and heralded by everybody. So what I thought was really cool about this is the huge, huge event thing that was going on wasn't even part of the story. Hey, we got to get out there and fight this thing. And then by the last page, it's destroyed and you don't even know how they did it. The story was the characters.
It was more about the team.
All of them realizing their importance, and Batman setting the tone for leaving. You know, the Green Lanterns really starting to feel like part of the team. So if you want to pick up a book to find out the whole what's going on in that, this is a great one. 14 is a good issue. I was also told by my friend John at work that I think he said Green Lanterns 14 is an issue completely standalone where you've got Jen talking about her issues that she deals with and insecurities. So it's one of those issues where it tackles a subject that is prevalent out in the real world.
All righty. Well, those are our new books for this week. And now it is time for your Out of the Long Box. And I am going to go back 3 or 4 years now. I think it was 2013, 2014, where I had met Justin Jordan at New York Comic Con, an artist alley. I was walking around with our buddy Dan Evans. Mm-hmm. And he, of course, probably very well known for Luther Strode. But there was a book that he had at his table that was called Spread. And as I'll show you, Matthew, it's got a pretty graphic – it's got like a guy who is covered in blood and holding an axe and has a baby in a baby Bjorn hanging off the front of him. So he's like this survivor in a wasteland that is escorting a baby around. And it has a very sort of horror and the Thing sort of vibe to it. So I immediately was all over that. So I ended up getting the first couple issues at New York Comic Con. And of course, the series is still ongoing now. It's up to like issue 20 or something like that. And I wanted to revisit it again. And so I'm going to talk about the first issue of it today. Now, it is co-created by Justin Jordan and Kyle Stram. It is written by Justin Jordan. The art is by Kyle Stram. Colors by Felipe Sobrero. Letters by Crank. And it's edited by Sebastian Gerner. It's an image book. And you can get the first couple volumes in addition to the floppies that are out now. I think it was put together back in 2014, this first one. And where we start off is we start off in what looks like the bloodiest briar patch that you've ever seen in your entire life. And when you start looking at this, and as far as the eye can see, there is this sort of blood red, spiny growth that has just infected the entire landscape. And when you look closer at it, there are eyeballs and very sharp teeth intermingled with these sort of tentacles and all these barbs that come out of it. And that's your first visual when you open up the first page. And the narrator's saying they weren't supposed to be here. I don't know where they were exactly. I know they were studying the spread. No told me later that this was the first plane anyone had seen since the burn and the quarantine. And what you're starting to see as the camera pans out is that there are pieces of an airplane that are now intermingled with this growth. And then you see the first body. And the body has, you know, a couple of tentacles around it. And you see that he's been shot in the back. And the narrator is saying, I guess this was the first time the flyer saw a plane, and well, the flyer did what flyers do. And you see that what took down this plane was a giant monstrosity that sort of jumped out of this growth. And it looks like a Lovecraftian creature, as you could see, Matthew. So, it's got mouths and eyes everywhere, and it's got tentacles, and it basically pulled the entire plane down into this snow-covered landscape. So it looks like you're somewhere up north. It's a snow-covered landscape, and contrasting with the snow is all the blood that's everywhere. And you're seeing that there's a bunch of bodies here around the site of the crash, but some of them have arrows sticking in their back. Some of them look like they've been attacked by some sort of a blade. And so you're seeing that it wasn't just the monster that killed everybody. There were people involved in this too. And you're seeing in the distance, there is a sort of a wanderer who comes along, and he's carrying a couple of bags. And the narrator is saying they weren't the only ones who shouldn't have been there. Something like this, you know, everybody in the range was going to be coming here, but Billy wanted to help. And you see that one of the casualties here is a guy by the name of Billy, who obviously came here to help whoever was surviving and ended up getting killed. And this is our first introduction to the main character of the series, whose name is No, N-O. and he is this sort of wanderer in the wasteland, but you see that he had a relationship with Billy. They were either partners or best friends or whatever, because you see that he's, you know, extremely distraught that that Billy is dead. And so as he is sort of closing Billy's eyes and taking the arrow out of his neck and sort of having a moment of silence, you see behind him that one of the corpses that was just on the ground is walking toward him. And as it does, you see that this particular corpse was one of the people that was on the plane. And now that he has been resurrected, this stuff is inside of him. And when he opens his eyes, if you look closely, you can see that his eyeballs turn into little mouths too, because this stuff is in him. And No turns around and says, stop. And of course he doesn't stop, because what happens is when people get infected by the spread, they just turn into killing machines. Mm-hmm. And so this thing comes flying at him. No grabs his axe. And as this thing pounces on him, its eyeballs now shoot out of its head like two like wormy things. Nice. And basically try attacking him, and he cuts them off and he ends up killing this guy. And it's being explained to you that this guy, No, is immune to the spread. There are certain people that are not affected by it. They don't get infected by it, but that doesn't mean they can't be killed by what it turns people into. And so he ends up killing this guy. And then you see in another area, there is a woman who's wounded. She's got an arrow through her leg, and she's running across this snow-covered landscape, and she's carrying a bundle. And these three guys are chasing her, and they end up catching up to her and taking the bundle away from her. And she's, you know, telling them to get away from this thing. Well, you see that it's a baby. So she escaped this plane crash, and you see that in addition to that guy, Billy, who was coming to help people that crashed, there are these marauders that show up, and it's very Mad Max, right? So there's these three scavengers that showed up, and they found whoever else was living, and they attacked them. Mm. And they were the people that killed whoever else was there. And so they've chased down this woman, and they found her with a baby. She's already dying because they have they've shot her several times and everything like that, but they take the baby with them. And so she's sort of left to die in the snow. And a little while later, our main character, No, wanders across her. And he's saying, you know, do you know how many there were? And she's like, listen, I don't know how many there were, but you need to get her. She's hope. And that's the last thing that she says before she dies. And so now No takes off after these guys. And when he finds them, they are in a horse-drawn back end. So basically, there's like the back end of a Jeep that has been cut in half.
Yep.
And it's being pulled by a horse. And on the back of it is a machine gun. And so these guys are just kind of wandering through the wasteland, scavenging for whatever they can. And No shows up and wanders across them and ends up getting into a battle with them and absolutely destroys them. Just kicks the crap out of them. He's quicker than them. He takes them out. And of course, then he discovers the baby. And when he does, he immediately starts getting pursued by some of these creatures that come out of the spread. And it can almost like spit out from its gigantic mass, like creatures of all different shapes and sizes. And so it just spits out this creature after him, and he grabs the baby and he gets running, and he actually jumps on the horse and starts riding the horse out of there. But all of a sudden the tendrils come out of the ground and they pull the horse down. And so now him and the baby are about to be surrounded by this monstrosity, when all of a sudden the baby starts crying. And when it does, its lone teardrop hits one of the tentacles and the whole thing dies all around them. So what he notices is that this baby and the baby's tears absolutely destroy and drive back this plague that has infected the land. And so now he has this kid, and you see off in the distance, there is this sort of wastelander that looks like he's kind of mutated, who is watching this all happen. And that's the way the first issue ends. And so by the end of the first issue, you now have this guy who is wandering a wasteland because a plague apparently has infected at least part of the world. And it is like this Lovecraftian monstrosity. And he seems to have found this child who is the key to stopping it from spreading even further. And I'm not going to reveal any more of the story as it goes on, but if you're a horror fan, this book is super gory and bloody and very Lovecraftian. If you're a fan of Cable, then this is very much like Cable and Hope. And so it's got a lot. And if you're a fan of The Thing, there are super duper nods to The Thing in here. And so, you know, the creative team there, you know, Justin Jordan and Kyle Stram, just do an awesome job with this book, and it's got a great vibe to it. So, and if you like Mad Max, obviously, mm-hmm. there's a huge Mad Max vibe to that too. So very cool series, still ongoing right now. You can pick up the first two volumes for pretty cheap. I would highly recommend it if you're into any of that stuff. And yeah, it's just really cool.
Very good.
So there you go. That's your Out of the Long Box for this week. That's going to do it for this episode of the Secret Identity Podcast. So for Mr. Matthew Herring, this is Brian Letenry signing off. Have a great rest of your week, and we will talk to you in a few short days.
Bye-bye.
The rest of the comic publishing world may finally be arriving to the party, but Drive-Thru Comics is the one that started it all. The first downloadable comic shop is still leading the way when it comes to digital comics. Featuring hundreds of publishers, excellent prices, and top-notch customer service, Drive-Thru is a great experience all around. Another thing that sets Drive-Thru apart from a lot of other digital comics platforms is this. When you buy a comic, you own it. You get a watermarked PDF file that you can read on your laptop, your tablet, phone, or any other device. You choose how you enjoy the comics you buy. So head over to drivethroughcomics.com today, and on your way to checking out, download a free issue of Secret Identity.